plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome back to another episode of Cantrip Cartel. We definitely didn't accidentally miss a week. I'm Jake. I'm here with Matt, and we're here to talk whatever is going on in our life. So how's it going, Matt?
Oh, I'm doing well. I think the episode, the title for today's episode should just be like, "We're dumb" or something. It's like, Jake just texted me on like Friday. He's like, "We forgot to record this week." I was like, "We sure did."
Yeah, it just completely, like I'm off on Tuesdays, and I've been pretty burned out lately. So this is my third week of six in a row, which plenty of people do all the time and they're fine with it. But I don't, and it's a lot for me. So I've just been really, really burned up and just skipped right through it on Tuesday. Didn't talk to Matt about it, and he didn't think about it, obviously. So yeah, like it occurred to me like Thursday night, Friday morning, like I never did any podcast stuff this week because we didn't record a podcast this week. Wow, we fucking suck.
Yep. I think on Tuesday I was playing Unicorn Overlord, which we'll get into, but it was just like when I'm playing that, I'm just kind of off in my own world. It's one of the few games in the past couple years that like I'm not sitting there like I don't feel the itch to check my phone. I have no podcast. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just 100% absorbed by the game and time just melts. And like Jake, you know this from personal experience, my basement is like a timeless environment.
Yeah, it is.
So you get down because it's like, you know, it's just a few light bulbs in a basement and like there's no way to know what time it is. Although Amanda, she made me get a small clock for the basement.
So you can know it, so you can keep track of what time it is.
Yep, because she was running into that. She's like, I kind of need to know what time it is sometimes. And I'm like, no.
Well, I was thinking you should get one of those lights and you should put it, they make daylight timers. So like the light goes out as it gets night.
It just kind of gets dim as the day goes
because
on.
Because I remember when I was growing up, my mom, we revamped our attic and put a room in it. And that was my room because it was a little bigger room. When I grew out of the small room we had in that little old house. But the problem is, like, my parents would let me sleep in on, like, weekends or whatever, and I'd sleep until, like, noon or 1.
Because
it's pitch black. There's no wind, because there was no windows. And in the complete absence of light, I am completely gone. And that's how the basement is. You have light on, obviously, but there is, with no reference of, like, sunlight, it's very hard to keep track of time.
Yeah, especially when you're, typically speaking, if you're down here, you're absorbed in something.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, we'll be down here playing Magic, or I'll be playing a video game, or whatever, and, like, you're kind of into something, and if you get really into it, that's the thing. Like, I think it's part of, like, cell phone culture, or at least smartphone culture. Like, when you're looking at your phone all day, or, like, you're like, on and off at all that, you kind of always know what time it is.
Yeah.
And then, like, I'm playing this video game. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, there's been multiple times where I've been playing it. And I'm like, it happened not last weekend, like 2 days ago, but like a week or two before that. And like, I just looked at the clock and it was like 11:30 at night. And for, I don't know, the past 10 years, I go to bed at 10 or before, like every single night, even on the weekends. And I go upstairs and Amanda's in bed. I'm like, why didn't you tell me? She's like, well, you were having fun playing your game. I was like, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but I had no fucking clue what time it was.
Yep. That's.
I just looked down. I'm like, oh, shit.
When I get into cycles playing like Tarkov with the guys on one of the Discords, or I felt that way playing Ready or Not, too. Like me and Rules Lawyer would play Ready or Not, and I'd play with other people, too. But like, I would just be playing Ready or Not, and like, it's been 4.5 hours. I've been doing nothing except Ready or Not for 4 hours. Because they're just, I'm so sucked into that game, those games in general.
Yep. I'm a big big fan of those, kind of like kind of getting that flow state where you're just, and I mean, obviously everybody is, like, it's one of the best feelings in the world.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's just awesome when you're in that flow state and you're just doing what you want to do, and like everything's, and like part of it has to do with like, it has to be challenging, but not challenging enough that you get frustrated. Like, it needs to be just outside of your skill level, so like you can like, you have a shot at it, but you need to like tweak stuff and learn and stuff like that. And you're just like, it's heaven. Like, that's what I imagine heaven is like.
You just get to sit around and enjoy the thing you're doing forever.
You're just kind of perpetually in a flow state where like you're learning and you're entertained and you're challenged and it's satisfying. Cause like, that's like, if you look at the way people behave, like, almost always, outside of, like, you know, random drug addicts and shit like that, like, that's what people are chasing, fundamentally. Like, people do jobs, like, you see, and you can see this from, like, the most high-tech jobs to the most basic ones, where, like, you'll see videos on TikTok or YouTube of, like, the dude who has mastered laying bricks.
Yeah.
And it's like, that guy does that. I mean, he may not, like, love what he does at the end of the, you know what I mean? But, like, when he's doing that, 100% flow state. You can just tell from the outside looking in. Like, he's just got this down, and he's doing it, and it's awesome. And you can see it in video games, in work, in, like, all kinds of stuff. I mean, every time you see, like, some dude on Call of Duty go on, like, a 15 kill streak.
Yep.
Like, that's that.
He's just locked in.
He's locked in, and it's, I mean, the best feeling in the world.
Like, I've had games, it doesn't happen super often, but I have had games where, like, I just feel untouchable. Like, you'll have matches where it's probably a mixture of, like, playing against scrubs and, you know, you're warmed up good for the night. But yeah, like, no one can come near me and survive. I just melt everyone in the vicinity, and that's all I'm chasing. Every time I hop on to play Apex or Call of Duty or Tarkov, I'm just chasing that feeling.
Yeah, and it's a great feeling. It's just, when it happens, it's super addictive. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not addictive in the bad way, where, like, you feel like shit if you don't get it, or, like, you're, like, you know, scratching your forearms because you need another hit. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you constantly want that feeling. And, like, at least to me, one of the things, because, you know, we use the word addiction, it's got some connotations, but, like, to me, an addiction is something that is negatively affecting your life, and you're doing it anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And flow state is almost never that. It can be that, but it's almost never that. Because, like, it's, like, if you're challenging yourself and getting better and improving and learning, that's rarely a bad thing. And it's rarely going to make your life worse. Now, you could chase that into oblivion and, like, neglect your outside duties, you know what I mean? Like, if you're just like, I just fucking love Call of Duty.
Yeah.
But, like, most of the video game addiction is more, like, dopamine hits, where, like gacha games, like loot box games and shit like that are the perfect example, where, like, that's where most of the addiction comes from in video games, in my opinion, where it's just, like, or fear of missing out, FOMO kind of shit, where it's like, I gotta keep playing, because if I don't, like, blah, 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 and it's just, okay. But, like, flow state is something you should be chasing in everything you do. I mean, as far as, like, that kind of stuff, obviously not literally everything, but, like, even in Magic. Like, I've had games where I'm just, like, you're, like, I sit down, like, I've had it, like, entire tournaments where I'm, like, yeah, dude, I'm same thing. Like, you're not going to win this game.
Yeah, I just,
like all cylinders are firing. I'm at 100%. You're not going to beat me.
Yeah, that's just the stars have aligned.
And that game, Unicorn Overlord, it really hits that, because, like, a lot of it's not even, I mean, you've seen me play it a couple times now. It's not, like, quick reflexes for the most part or anything like that. It's just thinking. It's like, they present you with a challenge of, like, hey, here's this combination of units. How do you beat it? Like, what beats this? What beats this? What beats this? Do they all work together? Are there synergies involved? Like, you know, I mean, down to the, like, I'm sitting here, like, managing initiatives because of the way the turn order works. Like, I want my character in my unit to go before another character so that he uses a buff to buff the front row. Then the front row attacks and just wipes the whole field. And it's like, well, if I change one item, this whole thing doesn't work. But if I put that item on there and, like, get it set up, then it's just going to wreck shit. And, like, that's, that kind of stuff is just super fun to tinker with. And that's that game. Like, Amanda will just be like, hey, you're going to go tinker tonight? And that's what she's talking about. Yep. Are you going to go downstairs and just fuck around on Unicorn Overlord? Because it's just fun to come up with different combinations. And there's so many. Like, a lot of the, excuse me, a lot of the classes towards the end are variants of basic classes, but they just tweak a couple things.
Yep.
So, like, there's, like, four or five different types of healer. And they just have different advantages and disadvantages. And like, one of the advantages of one of them is, like, he's not the best healer. But guess what? He flies. So, like, when you're moving around the battle maps, you can move over terrain.
Yeah, he's a huge asset.
So that's a huge asset. Like, that's a, not to mention, if he's your, so the way the, like, he can, you want him there, but then he gets access to, like, other stuff. So, like, if you, like, if your healer is the leader of your unit, then he can provide what's called assistance in battle. So, like, If he is within range of another unit fighting an enemy, mm-hmm. at the end of the battle, you can he'll like provide a heal to that other unit that he's not even in.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And there's the same thing with like archers and shit. So like if you can make a unit comprised of five archers, pop them up top. Up a tower, and they have a huge radius where like any fights happen, and they start the fight with a volley of arrows.
Oh, okay.
And like that's like really good. And if they're on one of the towers, it doesn't consume their stamina, so they can literally just fight after fight after fight, arrows, 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 arrows. And the biggest thing that's good against is like healers and shit. So like even stuff like that, where like you kind of want to have like a cavalry or a flying unit leading or member leading a whole unit mm-hmm. because they either move quickly or ignore terrain, but like if you do that, you can't have them provide assistance in fights, and the assistance is really good. Mm-hmm. So like, well, there's so much to do in that game.
Like you said, though, just that's the nitpicking and defining the lines and whatnot. That's the fun part.
Yeah, I mean it's like the magic of video games. And
that's why I liked playing Satisfactory so much. Is like I'm just gonna go problem solve for the next 3 hours.
Yep. And it just Satisfactory is like, here, have what amounts to a meaningless problem that you created yourself. Because, mm-hmm. like, there's an end state, but not really. Like, so, like, go build a factory and, like, troubleshoot it.
Mm-hmm. It's, I do miss having that, like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do for the next 4 hours when I get off work or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's a good feeling. But, yeah, unfortunately, I have now beaten Unicorn Overlord for the second time, this time on the second hardest difficulty. I don't know, at least not right away, I probably won't be playing it on the hardest difficulty. The way they increase the difficulty is, like, they don't do it by making the enemies smarter or changing, like, the unit composition themselves. They just buff their stats and make you fight a lot more enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm actually fine with on this difficulty, but I can see how going up even one more would start to like be annoying more than anything. So I don't know, like I'll probably do it eventually, like, you know, 6 months to a year, I'll get a hankering to play the game again, and I'll just go ahead and do it on the hardest difficulty.
That's basically what we do with whatchamacallit. It's how we play Satisfactory. It's like, once in a blue moon, I need to play Satisfactory again.
Yeah, and that game for me definitely goes on that list. Like, it's probably a top 20 video game of all time for me. Like, nice. As far as like my own personal enjoyment, like it's been a really long time since I got hooked on a game. Mm-hmm. Now, the only issue with it, and I mentioned this when you were over here the other day, is there's not much of an end game.
Yeah.
So like, you play through the game and then you beat the game, and then technically there's a there's a Colosseum where you can fight other players online and whatnot, but you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's what it really needs, and they did this, albeit maybe imperfectly, but like in Final Fantasy Tactics, not in the original release, but on the re-release for the PSP, they had like a 100-floor like dungeon that you kind of fight in the dark.
Oh, like, nice.
So like you just keep going down floor after floor after floor. So there's like a ton of stuff. There's stuff to get down there, but there's also like really challenging content that like, because mm-hmm. like if you, same thing in it just basically any JRPG, if you do your grinding before the final boss, like you'll beat the final boss and then what? Like,
yep, the game is basically
done. I have
done
all the cool shit. The game is basically done. Whereas in it's called a Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Lions. It's also got a bit of a retranslation because there were some translation issues. It was the 90s. That's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There were some translation issues in the first, the original release. So they've ironed some of those out. There's a couple other differences as well. I don't remember them off the top of my head. And then they added that, like, it's not endless, but like a dungeon-esque kind of thing. And I really wish there was something like that in Unicorn Overlord, like a random map generator or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they would pull it off, but it'd be really cool if they did.
I feel like you can make that procedural.
Yeah. So that's about the only thing the game's missing. 100%, like it's a 10 out of 10 for me. Like I've got 120 hours in it. So
that's all. That's
fantastic.
Exactly.
Game.
That's the only thing all of us are ever hoping for in life is just can I have some game that I can just sink a bajillion hours into, please?
Yeah, and I'd keep playing it if there was more to do. Mm-hmm. Like, the only reason I stopped is I'm like, okay, well, like, and the story was good the first time, so, like, I paid attention to that. It's not a super deep story, but there's a ton of interesting characters and stuff like that. Like, I've already reviewed it on here, but, like, it's just a great game. And they're still patching it. Like, there was just a patch a day or two ago for, like, balancing some classes, mainly just a couple. There's a character who can wear two shields, and there's a class that can wear, they dual wield. And so they each got a little bit of a buff because they weren't getting any. So like you get guard rate from shield, which is just the rate at which you'll block.
Mm-hmm.
And the character, her name's Virginia, she would only get guard rate from the first shield. And apparently it was, they wanted it, either it was supposed to be like this the whole time, or they wanted it to be to buff her where she gets half her guard rate from the second shield. So small buff.
Oh, yep.
And then it was the same thing with the damage on the dual wielders, on swords. So like it'll take their, and it does it of the lowest one. So like if your damage is 20 on one sword and 15 on the other, you get half of 15 added to your total damage.
Oh, okay.
So, that will help those units quite a bit. They're like just on the cusp of being good because they're kind of dodgy. They're basically fencers. Mm. And they're not like evasion tanks. They get a move that it's called parry. So when they attack, they parry it, and there's two resources. Go a little bit on this. There's AP and PP. There's active points and passive points. So passives, exactly what it sounds like. So like triggered abilities and reactive stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the move called parry consumes one PP, and it blocks an attack, but then it gives you an AP back. So you're converting as it's instead of consuming.
Yeah.
And so like they're really good up front because they're also like they can do a ton of damage. They're based around critting. So like their two main attacks just have like a natural crit rate of like plus 30 or 40%, shit like that.
Yeah.
So
that's
like
huge.
If you can get right. So if you can get them to naturally have a, you know, plus 50 or 60% crit rate, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you can basically guarantee a crit every time they attack. Well, one of their moves uses 2 PP. It's called Meteor Strike, and it attacks 9 times.
Oh, God uses, damn.
So, like, in their, if you can make them quick, then they can, you know, attack 9 times, basically guarantee 2 crits. The problem is they don't do a shit ton of damage.
Yeah. But if they crit, but, that kind of
but
offsets
if they,
it.
That basically their crit brings them up to where they should be. So like when you use Meteor Strike, it almost always kills somebody.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So just giving them more damage is awesome in my book, and it's going to make them pretty good. So I need to fuck around with them a little bit. The problem is there are attacks that are like can't be guarded, stuff like that, and they don't have they're fragile.
Mm-hmm.
So I put 3 up front because they give you 3 of them that are like named storyline characters. So I kind of wanted to keep them all in one group because they all kind of go together. Mm-hmm. 3 up front. I gave the way the battles work is there are each side in a fight gets one opportunity at the start of a fight to use what's called a start. Like it's an ability that triggers at the start of the battle. So, like, those are obviously pretty big because mm-hmm. if, like, the game's only going to let you use one of them, they have to be pretty big. Well, the Vikings get a move. It's called Warhorn, and it makes it so all your, and this is kind of cool because it's a buff instead of a debuff, so it's, like, more difficult to interact with. Your attacks are unblockable, basically. So, like, tanks, they still have high defense, but their shields are useless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways you would beat those sword masters, the dual wielders, is just by having high defense and guarding a lot, where it's just like, well, you're going to attack a, like if you're just, you just imagine a fencer versus a giant knight in heavy armor, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, well, yeah, you can like, quote unquote, score points, but you're going to have a hard time actually killing somebody who's wearing giant steel plates.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going to, you're not going to penetrate the armor, right? Yeah. Well, this goes, well, all my attacks are unguardable. And then I have 3 sword masters who are very good at tanking for mm-hmm. at least a short amount. In short fights, they're very good at tanking. I gave the, I can't remember if, I put a shaman back there to debuff the enemy's defense so they take more damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also, her first action is set to use this item, it's called Gambler's Coin, which reduces like the accuracy of an attack. Of like, it basically buffs a row and they get like a decent chunk down in accuracy, but their damage and like crit damage or whatever the fuck it is, basically the damage of the attack goes way through the roof. It's kind of like power attacking in D&D, and it does it to all three of them. So it's like, go quickly, buff the shit out of the front row, and then they all use Meteor Strike. So it's just like, I'm going to attack 27 times on turn one.
Jesus. Yeah.
With a 100% crit rate, and it's unguardable.
It's a pretty good build. That's a pretty strong build.
Yeah, and it's fun. Like that, and that's what I'm talking about, is like, that kind of stuff is fun. And it's not, and like, the funny thing is, that's not even necessarily broken. It's just, that's how you... that's a one way to use those characters. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, they go around and there's some units that they can beat and some that they can't, and they kind of fall in the middle. But it's a lot of fun to like theory craft that kind of build, and like just watch it play out. So that's what I do. That's what I've been doing. Now I'm probably gonna... you piqued my interest in playing it again, and I think it would actually work well if I did. I'll probably, the next game I play, I'll probably just play Final Fantasy Tactics, because you got me set up with one of those emulators, the handheld emulators. So I'll probably go ahead and just play Final Fantasy Tactics on that. That way, if and when you ever like start picking up on it, then I can be like, yep, this is, you know, I'll have a firmer grasp on it again, because it's been quite a while since I played it.
Oh man, I tried so hard to want to play Final Fantasy Tactics and just didn't. Like, I loaded the game up, I watched the first sequence, and I really think that I just liked playing that that similar kind of game because I was playing it with you. I don't think I actually like those kinds of games. I think I just enjoyed playing something with you. Because we played some, like, free-to-play, because you have PlayStation Plus game, and it was a procedurally generated, like, turn-by-turn fighting game. And it was really fun, but I think it was just, I think upon recollection, it was just because I was playing with my buddy.
Well, the best way to look at Final Fantasy Tactics to me is chess. Like, it's chess with pieces you can develop and, like, play different scenarios. Because that's basically what it is. Is it's a lot more complicated as far as, like, not necessarily the strategies, because I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh my god, Final Fantasy Tactics is harder than chess! Like, not going to go down that route. There's more, you know, you've got like, I forget how many different pieces, 10 or 11 in chess, something like that. There's more combinations.
What, one, two,
or, yeah, three, four, five. It's like six or seven.
It's only like six unique pieces.
Yeah. I was counting the whole back row and it brain farted that there's duplicates.
Almost all of them are duplicate.
Yeah. So like there's just tons of different jobs and, you know, job combinations, and then you just play chess with height, as well as basically it's three-dimensional chess, and like you just that's what it is. It's just chess.
Yeah, I just wasn't super excited to play it. It just didn't like scratch any itches for me, and it didn't help that I found a fun Pokemon ROM hack, because I've been really on Pokemon lately, so finding that to be able to jump into and have a lot of fun pulled me away from Tactics even more.
Well, the funny thing is like we're kind of the opposite. I tried to play Pokemon and they're just too simple for me anymore. Where it's like the nostalgia is fun, but like,
so they, I mean, that definitely is,
they like, get they, like they get like four moves.
They definitely are very simple.
So like, I love JRPGs, but like I think the genre has progressed past where Pokemon ever was or will be, in my opinion.
Maybe
like, realistically,
but I love it.
Well, I'm not talking about as far as like game quality. They're great games. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm talking about complexity. And I've played enough JRPGs that like simple ones don't cut it anymore. Like they don't scratch that itch, because like the gameplay is the complexity.
That's probably why I like them, is I'm not out here chasing like super complex. I enjoy quite a bit. Just like it's simple. It's very straightforward. I know the rules. I don't have to worry about it. So that's probably why I enjoy them so much, is I just get to play a nice simple game that I know the basic premise. This, it's kind of funny to me. The emulator, the new Pokemon that I downloaded, it has a function in it where it's like, hey, do you know, like, all the interactions of, like, ghost type and fairy type and whatever? And I was like, no, not really, because there's a ton of them. This one has, like, seventh generation or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I don't really know that kind of stuff. And so now when you hover over the move, it just tells you if it's like, you'll get like a green up arrow or like a red down arrow if they're weak against it or not. And I was like,
it's got
thank
the elemental
you.
Wheel for you.
Thank you yep. so much. That's exactly what I wanted.
Well, and the funny thing is the trick to Pokemon is get Charizard and don't throw him out against a water Pokemon and you'll probably be all right.
Pretty much. Although, I'm like, it gets...
I mean, it's not that simple.
Well,
I'm
well, the early ones, yeah. Like even when I played, like replayed Sapphire, like there's a couple moves that are just good against anything. It seems like,
yeah.
And now, like once you get like 7, 8, 9 generations, whatever I'm playing, it's kind of crazy how much shit there is, and it's like that doesn't feel like any because every Pokemon has like 2 or 3 types now, and it's complicated enough that I don't fucking know anymore.
Yeah,
but. Yeah. Luckily, I mean, though, that, like about like it is easy enough though that like you can just stumble through it just fine. Like it's still super easy, and even though I don't know all that stuff, you just the punishments are pretty low. Your couple Pokemon are usually over leveled enough that it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, you can kind of like it's hard to out level a like if you're a fire Pokemon and you get hit with water, that's still gonna do a decent amount of damage, yeah. But like. If you're like, hey, I'm fire, and it's not necessarily weak to fire, it's, you're like, yeah, my level can overcome that. I don't.
Well, just
like it doesn't have to be a plant Pokemon for me to kick its ass.
The thing about like Pokemon nowadays, like they're so obscure. Like some Pokemons, it's obvious what types they are, yada yada. But like a lot of them, they're just so obscure. I have no clue what this Pokemon actually is and what it should be weak to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure if I read its Pokedex entry, I would know, but I don't do that. I don't care. I'll bump up against a new Pokemon I've never seen before. It's like, I have no fucking clue what's going on here.
Well, blast it with my strongest attack.
Pretty much. That's just what happens. That's exactly what happens. Oh my gosh.
That's what we're doing here.
All right. Before we move over to me, we will remember this week to read off our patrons like we should do every week and pretty much never do. But a huge shout out to Asphalt, Emperor, Ramblin' Rogue, Ashley, Eric, Monowolf, Ethan, CJ, Ted, Mumbledown, Rob M, Limit of Questions, Derek T, His Forest, and Jasper. A huge shout out every week to all of our patrons who help support the show in such a real and meaningful way. If you're ever interested in joining the Patreon, it's patreon.com/cantripcartel. Every week we try to record 30 or 40 minutes of bonus content we put up there for them. And also to get you access to the Discord. So we've got stuff going on all, you know, chat or talking about Modern, talking about Legacy, talking about Warhammer. Pretty much anything that we got going on, we've got someone talking about it. And we have a lot of fun over there. And if you ever want to get a part of it, any tier on the Patreon will get you there. So thanks to everyone who's a part of it. Hopefully we see anyone else who might be interested. And I think that's all I've got for Patreon. So I haven't really been doing anything except working a lot. I'm wrapping up my 3 weeks, the 3 weeks I've had on where all I do is, or the 3 weekends in a row I have on where all I do in my life is work and then work some more and then work. And I just live at the farm pretty much. Luckily, we're done. I've got 3 more days to work this week. And then I get to have a weekend off, rest, relax, probably get some stuff done around the house and not do a ton of stuff. But like, ugh, I'm so excited to find like it's I've been trying to set reasonable goals throughout the whole time where it'll be like, hey, you know, hey, we're 1 weekend down, 2 to go. And then, hey, oh, we're officially over halfway. We're getting there. And, you know, now it's my last weekend done. But like now it's like the real like it's all downhill because I've got 3 more days. I have to work 3 more days, and this whole endeavor is over. And even more light at the end of the tunnel, sort of, because we're gonna pay for it in the short term. One of the guys that I work with is leaving. He's actually going back to work with his dad's farm. For anyone who's been listening, it's the same guy who breaks everything every week. So in the short term, it'll kind of suck because we're going down to 4 people, and like at 5 people is a great number where we all like. We have time to do all of our stuff. We've been making improvements to the farm. It was actually a big deal. We had, you know, as a dairy farm, we probably had 5 inspections in the last 2 months between like state inspections and animal welfare inspections and milk quality inspections and cleanliness inspections. We've had literally like 5 separate big, like important inspections in the last like 2 or 3 months. And almost all of these inspections, we failed horribly last year. And this year, since you know, I've been there, and we've had five people and we've been working on it, we have passed all of them at like a 95 or better.
Nice.
Like, we fucking killed all of our inspections. And a big part of that was having five people and having him there. And so it will suck losing him for sure. But I will get to become the lead feeder. And that means that I will get to almost exclusively feed in the morning. Whereas now I do, I usually feed 3 or 4 times a week. And then I will do other things the other 1 or 2 times, depending on how many days I'm working. But I usually, pretty much always on Mondays, I go in the evenings and I will work on milking or work with whoever we have working that day. And then on Wednesdays, I go in early, feed the calves, and then I do other. I just kind of bounce around and do whatever I need to do. Whereas as a lead feeder, one, I'll work almost entirely on mornings, which I would very much prefer. I just do mornings. I don't want to try and flip my sleep schedule back and forth. I don't want to have to worry about managing it. I just do mornings. And two, I'm working with my boss to try and get a move the schedule around a little bit and get a copy of his schedule, sort of. Whereas he had Fridays off so that he would have Friday, Saturday, Sunday when he had a weekend off. I am trying to get Mondays off so that on my weekends, I will get Saturday, Sunday, Monday off. And I'll get to have a 3-day weekend every couple weeks. And I'm really excited about all those changes happening. Yeah. As far as, like, things I've done or, you know, I haven't really done anything. I've gone to work, I've come home, and I've gone to sleep. And that's all I've been doing. I turned my computer on yesterday for the first time in like 2 weeks. And I spent most of today on it, playing around and goofing. But the rest of my life has just been like, go to sleep, wake up, get home. Or wake up, go to work, get home, nap, hang out with the wife for a couple hours, and then call the night, I'm done.
Yeah. I've been there. It freaking sucks.
Yeah. But it's ending now, and I did get to hang out with you this weekend a couple days, so we went and we did some fussing in your garage, but that isn't the fun part. What we did yesterday was pretty fun. We got to two days ago, but we played a bunch of pre-modern, and we kind of got you into the deck you probably wanted to play.
Yeah, at least in the short term. So, like, over the past couple weeks when we played pre-modern, I've just been getting kind of frustrated with, like, basically just having a series of what amount to non-games.
Mm-hmm.
A big part of that was playing pre-modern elves. It's a good deck, but there's so many combo decks in the format that each consist of, like, 1 or 2%. And, like, so you have to, like, you have to be able to beat them. So, like, if we were going to be, like, say I was going to show up to a tournament and it was, like, 5 or 6 rounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a solid chance I run into at least one of, if not two of these decks.
Yeah.
Like, somebody there is going to be playing Hermit Druid. Like, it's almost guaranteed. What was the other one? There's, like, somebody's going to be there playing Stasis, like, for sure.
Yep.
There's multiple different other, like, wacky ones using, like, Sutured Ghoul and shit like that. Not to mention, we didn't end up playing any of them because we just kind of picked the matchups randomly. But there's Stifle Knot, which is like it's like probably the most common deck in the format.
Mm-hmm.
There's Oath of Druids running around. Like, there's just a ton of fucking combo decks. And like, Elves is like slower than all of them.
Yeah. And has
no way to interact.
No disruption at all. No counter spells, no hand disruption, no nothing.
Yeah, so it's just like, I go turn 1, Llanowar Elf, and your opponent goes, okay, cool. Turn 2, another Elf, Priest of Titania, sweet, I'm fucking off to the races. Like, if this Priest of Titania sticks around, like, we're fucking golden. And you untap and you play Hermit Druid. And it's like, well, either win next turn on turn 3, or the game's over.
Yep, and that's literally what happened.
And, like, there's, we didn't mention it, but, like, Replenish can do the same thing.
Yep.
Where they don't literally kill you on turn 2 or 3, but they put you in an unwinnable board state where it's like, well, I can just exile all your creatures forever?
Yeah, it's...
Or your lands?
It's really rough. There's a lot of really rough matchups, and I get it. Like, it's not fun just losing all the time and feeling like... Even you didn't even make that many bad decisions. You just, this is, I just can't, this is a difficult game to win in general, and I have to lose it again and again and again.
Well, that, and then, so here's the other thing. So, like, that is true in Legacy as well, right? Even when I was playing in Legacy, there's a bunch of combo decks, mm-hmm. and they're all faster than you.
Yep.
Elves was basically the slowest combo deck. But what Elves' advantage was it was actually, it had pretty good game against the better decks in the format. So, yeah, like, it's going to lose to Charbelcher, Show and Tell's a turn quicker, Storm's a turn quicker, but like I've got a great Miracles or Control matchup, I've got a great fucking Delver matchup, mm-hmm. like I've got ways to combat the other, like the actual decks that are like, so if I can dodge one in the first round and maybe get lucky in the second round, it's off to the races because like most of those decks aren't going to make it past round three,
mm-hmm.
and like I'm good to go. And I've actually literally done that in several 1Ks where like, I'll go undefeated in the Swiss in Legacy, and then I won my first one, top eighted several others, but then it's like, if some combo deck happens to just luck it, not luck into, but make it into the top eight, they're frequently just a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
So like, because it's just like, well, this guy clearly knows what he's doing because he's in the top eight, he's got a decent list, and he's a turn faster than me. So, but like, in pre-modern, I don't even think it has good game against any of the top decks either. So, like, the top four decks in the format are some variant of Stifle Knot, some variant of, like, Terravor Oath.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few variants of each of these, but, like, that they're the kind of two. And then Burn and Goblins. And, like, the only one that Elves has a good, like, a reasonable matchup against is the Terravor Oath decks. And they run red now for Pyroclasm and shit. And, like, they've at least evened that matchup up. Mm-hmm. So when it was, like, green, white, or mono green, I think Elves, in my opinion, it felt pretty heavily favored. Because, like, I'd sure drop your 10-10 or whatever the fuck it is. But, like I'm not terribly concerned about you getting one big dude. Because mm-hmm. for the most part, those decks just kind of let you do your thing. And they're trying to attack the way their disruption is mana disruption as far as lands go. And it's like, well, beyond turn one or turn two, I don't really care about that.
Yep.
So, yeah, like, once I get a Llanowar Elf and a Priest of Titania or whatever the fuck I got going on, like, I'm good to go. So, then they just, like, Fran, who's got a YouTube channel, I basically watch every one of his pre-modern videos,
mm-hmm.
decided one day to brew mono green Ponza Oath, but splash red for Pyroclasm and shit.
Yep.
Like, all of a sudden we've got, and he specifically did it to improve the Goblins and Elves matchup. And that's like,
rough.
Right. Because, like, Elves was a real deck, and, like, now it's, and it still is a real deck, but it's just one of those things where, like, I don't see it as, like, I would not want to bring Elves to a tournament I was actually trying to win.
Because,
mm-hmm. like, there's very few decks that I feel like I'm favored against. There's very few decks that I feel I'm even against, and even fewer that I'm favored against. And, like, more than half the field, I feel like I have at a steep disadvantage. Not to mention, the most popular sideboard card in the format, pretty much, is Engineered Plague.
Yep.
So, like, even on decks that you think, like, game one, you've got an advantage, it's an uphill climb on games two and three, because they have, like, three mana, one-sided board wipe.
Well, like, you've fallen into the trap again of, like, well, Goblins is pretty good, and so people have really good tech against Goblin sideboard, and that means that you have to live with the
Engineered Plagues.
Engineered Plagues everywhere.
Right. So, long story short, at least in the short to medium term, I don't think I'll be playing much Elves. Obviously, mm-hmm. if we randomly draw it, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I had a few different options I was talking to Jake about, and like my next favorite deck was Black-White Control, which I still enjoy playing, so mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to try that out. The other options were either, like, I like the blue-black version of Stifle Knot. It's mm-hmm. a lot of fun to play. I really like Psychotog as a card, and it runs three Psychotogs as a kind of plan B. Mm-hmm. It's like blue-white Stifle Knot just has Meddling Mages as its plan B, and they're good defensively, and they can win games offensively, but, like, if your opponent can just stop your Stifle Knots, they're way ahead. Like, it's hard to, mm-hmm. it's an uphill climb trying to win the game with Meddling Mage. Psychotog, it's not. Psychotog is frequently lethal the turn after he hits the board.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing it right.
Yeah, that card is a real beating quite often.
He's also the consummate blocker. He's like, you can basically not attack into a Psychotog. Mm-hmm. If I have more than a few cards in my graveyard and a couple in my hand, like, there's no winning that. So he's a lot of fun to play. So we started out playing on Sunday with... I was playing some black-white, and these felt more like bad luck than just the deck being bad. Mm-hmm. But I got super... like, we played, two matches, and... I think I played, like, one actual game of Magic.
Yeah, you did not really have...
several games I cast, like, two cards.
You did not have a good experience playing playing Pre-Modern that day. So, but, like, once you picked up Stifle Knot, like, we had a lot of interactive games. The deck has a lot of power behind it, and it has the ability to, like, to come out strong, to close games, all that stuff.
Well, and that's what I'm looking for, is just to be able to play a game of Magic. Mm-hmm. Like, I have preferences what it is, but, like, we're not playing for money here. Realistically, you know, we may enter a 1K at some point, but, like, even that's kind of a long shot. We're having fun with a card game we enjoy, but we're hanging out in my basement. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't care about losing. I want to just play a fucking game.
Yep.
We had several games of Magic in a row when I was playing stuff, because it's just like, look at that. Can actually do something. Yep. Like it was that.
What a concept.
Right. And that's all I want. I don't care. Like, I want to win. I play to win. Uh-huh. But I'm not heartbroken if I lose. I fucking lose Magic games all the time. Who cares? Like, I want to play a game and not go, fucking 10 turns in with one planes in my black-white deck.
Yeah,
and I didn't even start with the planes. I had, like, I got a fucking Eternal Dragon, and didn't even get enough mana to fucking recur it.
Yeah, get stuck on mana, stuck on lands.
Yeah, I have to use my Exalted Angel to chump block a Nantuko Vigilante, which confuses the fuck out of Jake.
Why
are you doing that? I'm like, because I can't flip the fucking thing. I've got one white source, and we're on turn 12.
In what world is this the trade we make? What is going on?
Right. Die to, like, I literally died to not elf combo. I fucking got killed by, like, three elves, a Wirewood Symbiote, and Tuco Vigilante, effectively, with a Wrath of God in my hand.
Yeah. Yeah, just the beatdown strategy against the Wrath of God deck that had Wrath of God the entire game but wasn't allowed to play it.
Yeah. Opening hand was, like, two swamps, Wrath of God, Eternal Dragon, Swords to Plowshares, and like one or two other cards. It was one other card because I had to mull the first one.
Completely. So I got six cards on white.
I'm like, okay, this is a perfectly reasonable hand. It's not ideal, but like the odds that I never fucking hit another Eternal Dragon or another white source are so fucking slim by the time it matters. Like, I've got four turns. Like, I'm good to go. Never fucking hit one.
It did
die with Wrath of God in my hand. I was just like, son of a bitch.
Oh, it was awesome. I had a great time.
I'm sure. Well, even on your side, where it's just like your deck didn't even do its thing.
Oh, I feel
like
you
played some Land of War Elves and punched me to death.
I definitely feel bad watching you just like not get to do anything. Like, hey, I guess I'll just attack you for four again. I'll attack you for four again, Matt. I'm gonna attack you for lethal. Okay.
I'm gonna pick up my deck and shuffle again.
I was like, at what point? You gotta be holding something. At what point do you stop holding it? I don't know what moment you're waiting for here, Matt. But you gotta do something.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is like, so my whole game plan was like, okay, I know how to play against elves. I'm the control deck. I need to get rid of these Wirewood Symbiotes, because you actually got two Wirewood Symbiotes in this matchup is really good. Because, like, if I don't answer the fucking, I can answer the first one, like, answering the first Wirewood Symbiote for almost any real deck is not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But the second one is like, okay, now I have to have two removal spells, two timely removal spells.
Mm-hmm.
And I had them. Like,
doesn't matter.
And I'm like, okay, we're good. And it's not enough, because Land of War Elf is just going to beat me to death.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't matter.
Sure, like, is.
Because I'll just literally never cast another spell.
Oh, that was awesome.
And like,
and awful.
It was just. Yeah. And then we played fucking like three half. I mean, we would have gone to time. Like, we wouldn't have finished the fucking match where it was Psychonaut versus Stasis.
We wouldn't have finished the second game.
I know. I won game two, and I was like, sweet, I took the match. And I was like, no, dude, that was game two.
Yeah. Matt's like, ooh, afraid to shuffle up and go get a different deck. And it's like, no, we have to keep playing still. We're not done yet.
Those were long as fucking games.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, those were
They were good, though. Like, games. They were actually games of Magic. We're like, you know, trying to formulate a plan. Like playing, I like playing against Stasis in general because like you just, you have to fundamentally approach the matchup differently. And it's kind of, the root maze thing complicates things a lot, but like you have to, you've got a few different, you can try to be faster than it, which, like Stiflenaut definitely has the potential to do. And I think in general is something it should go for against Stasis. Because, like, especially, at least as far as your build goes, we've kind of tuned down. Like, you've got some dazes and, like, some foils and thwarts, but, like, you can't cast, realistically cast thwart till turn three. And foil's expensive enough that if, like, you foil my fucking vision charm, then, like, we're even on cards and that kind of sucks. But, like, I'm still, like, I'm going to make you foil it, right? And that still gives me an opportunity to daze your foil or, you know, any number of things. We've got counterplay there. But, like, the problem is if you go for it and miss early, you can just as easily untap and just literally win the game.
Yep.
So, like, you have to, you really have to pick your spot against Root Maze Stasis, which is a lot of fun for me. Like, if I actually have game. Like, if it's just a...
Yeah.
Like, every now... Like, obviously, you know, you've done it a couple times where, like, turn two, Root Maze Stasis.
And the game's over.
Phyrexian City, or Forsaken City, game's over. Like, I tapped out to play a Priest of... Again, play a Priest of Titania on turn two, pass, okay, game's over.
Immediate punish.
Well, we basically just didn't play a game of Magic there. But like when we actually play, and that's one of the, basically this format and these past several weeks and whatnot have just led me to the point where I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be playing any non-blue decks for a while.
Yeah.
Which I fucking hate. Because like, not that I hate blue, but I, for the longest time, like I mean, since I started playing Magic, I've just been the standard bearer, at least in my friend group. And like, I'm not the blue guy. Like, I'm the guy who can play against blue and win. And, like...
You're eventually coming to the light.
Like, well, it's not even... Like, I don't even care about playing against the blue decks. It's like, there's actually way more nonsense in pre-modern than I thought there was initially.
Yeah.
And, I feel like I need to have a way to defend myself. Like, mono-green elves are effectively mono-green elves. Just, it's not fast enough. But it still has to win through the combat step.
Yeah.
So, like, Burn has ways to get around it where it's just like, you know, I'm, you know, Burn's not, it's fast, but it's not like crazy fast. Like, you usually have to turn three or four, like, even if it's gold fishing, unless they get something like the nuts where you get Ball Lightning Fire Blast. But, like, if they're just kind of doing, they're an average game against Burn is going to take a few turns. That's fine, but they don't have to win through combat.
Nope. You only win in the red zone.
I only win in the red zone, and I'm the slowest combat, and I'm the slowest fucking combo deck in the format.
Yeah.
So, like, what the fuck am I? And I have no defense. Like, I'm all in on offense. Like, Elves is almost as fragile as something like Hermit Druid.
Yeah. Because you have to, like I said, you're not doing anything unless you go super wide. There's no, like, oh, I'm going to bait it out. I'm going to commit to the board enough that he has to deal with it and then go all in. Because if you don't go all in, you're not doing anything.
Right. Like, because your guys don't get there by themselves. The only card that gets there by itself is Deranged Hermit. It costs fucking five. So again, either A, turn five, best case scenario, which frequently isn't true because you don't run a ton of lands.
Yep.
There's like 20 in the deck or 18 or 19, just depends on the build, but ballpark 20 or less.
Yep.
So like getting five lands on turn five is uncommon.
Oof.
So like you have to commit something to the board and like, yep. I don't know. I mean, there are builds, like Natural Order Elves, but I tried that and didn't like it because there's just too many bad cards in the deck.
Yeah, like too many times you draw a card and it's just like, this is the opposite of what I need right now. I wish my deck had good cards in it.
Right, and they're good if they're basically free, like, you know, Vertaloth, or not Vertaloth, maybe it is Vertaloth. No, whatever the fuck one. The dude that makes a sapling every turn, he's a great card.
Oh, yep.
Morrow's a great card, like... If they come out for four mana and you're on like turn three.
Yeah, but every other time.
But if they're in your opening hand, it's like having a dead fucking card. Yep. And hell, even the build, this build of elves that I built to minimize that still has like fucking gnarly ass ugly hands. Where like I open it up and it's like, cool, I have Squee and Anger in my opening hand along with Kamal.
Yeah, those. So, you have a three card hand, or you have a four card hand.
I have a four card hand, so I have to mulligan this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm mulliganing in a deck that A, has just as likely to have that hand pop up again. I mean, you had it happen at least once where it's like, well, I'd love to keep this, but my only land's Guy's Cradle.
Yeah, I had two Cradles.
Yeah, like, see how often, like, I know what you only played once, but, like, that happens way more often than you'd think.
More often
and, like,
should.
That's just an unkeepable hand. So, like, it's just, like, there's so many combinations of bad openers in, like, every elf list I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. Because, I mean, I was looking at TC decks, and, like, elves just top it. It's a slightly different list than mine.
Yeah.
But it just top aided the April challenge, which I figured we'd talk about on the
Patreon
episode. Go over the top eight. Not a ton of people. There's like 29 people in it. But like it got its second, and like it's got fucking. It's a similar list. It's basically got Tangle Wires instead of Deranged Hermits. Like there's one Deranged Hermit and four Tangle Wires instead of four Deranged Hermits and no Tangle Wires. But other than that, I mean the list is pretty fucking identical. There's also a Biorhythm, which I mean, I guess that does give you a way to win without attacking.
Yeah.
But it's fucking eight mana.
And there are a lot of... Yeah, that's sort of a way to win without... Well, that's a way to win without attacking, not a way to win without creatures.
Correct. So, like, you still have to go wide. It just kind of gives you pseudo-haste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to be fair, it is also kind of a... it's kind of like Overrun. So, like, if I have five or six creatures and you have, like, one big one, I cast Biorhythm and I just swing.
Yeah.
And they're all lethal. Because, like, you know, your life total's one and you only have one blocker and I've got 6 1/1s. Game over.
Yeah. I see that.
I get it.
A little bit of, like, a combo juke at the end, sort of.
Yeah. But, like, that's actually really cool. The same deck.
The idea that you could have, like, you know, you could have three Land of War Elves out and four lands. You could be, like, tap your Gaia's Cradle, play a second Gaia's Cradle, tap Gaia's Cradle, cast Biorhythm, attack with three lethal attackers.
Yep. The problem is, it's a one of, and you can't get it with the Survival of the Fittest.
Nope, you just have to draw it.
You just have to draw it.
But presumably it's, well, those things are always weird to me, because, like, so is it there for the control matchup, in which case you're never resolving it? Like, your plan is to, so, like, for me, it's mana short. I have one mana short in my stasis deck for, like, control matchups when my opponent is happy to be, like, land go, and then I can be, at the end of their turn, cast mana short. Like, I don't care if it takes me 30 cards to draw it. You go ahead and sculpt your hand. Mana short resolves, or you fight over it and commit a bunch of your mana to it anyway, in which case I've accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish. Whereas elves, that's not really the case. You can't just spend the whole game waiting for Biorhythm to show up against the control deck, because you can't win a counter war for it.
Yeah, and you can't force yourself to draw it.
So that seems like a nice little one-up juke, but it's not... That doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem like that's the answer to the problem you're having.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Basically, it just boils down to I'm playing this format for fun. I was not having fun playing elves.
Yeah.
Moving on from elves. I'll go to my other pet deck. The other deck, we don't have to really go deep on it or anything, but I was also considering Groatog, which is a combination of Quarian Dryad, Psychotog, and Meddling Mage for the creatures, and it's kind of like a tempo deck. It's not one of the top decks, but it's... So the Spike Colony podcast, it's Lanny and Mike Flores.
Uh-huh.
It's Lanny's deck, and he talks about it so much that it sounds really fun to play, and I watched him play a league with it, and it was a lot of fun. And, like, one of the most it's not even, like, that badass of a play, but going Gush, Bounce Two Islands, Armageddon just seems like such a fucking, like, two middle fingers.
Yeah, I've seen that happen plenty of times on stream, but on a YouTube channel or whatever, and it's like, yeah, that looks like a lot of fun to
delightful.
Do. And a lot of painful, and very painful to walk into.
Yeah, and all you need is, like, at that point, obviously, you just need to be ahead on the board. Like, you just... Like, so, I mean, simple as, like, I have a Meddling Mage, and I've literally seen him do this. I have a Meddling Mage, and you don't have any creatures at all.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to go Gush Armageddon, and I'm going to beat you to death with a fucking tutu.
Yep. That's exactly how this game is going to end.
That basically, as soon as it comes down, names the most common answer to itself. So you go, okay, I'm playing against a white deck, Swords to Plowshares.
Yep.
Gush Armageddon.
So rough.
Good luck. Like, and that just sounds like super fun to do, but it also has a ton of other lines, and it's one of the things I actually like about it as well is it's like a his build is like a four or five color deck.
Jeez, how do you make that work?
City of Brass.
just running.
Like it's not like a hard 4 or 5 color deck, but it's Quarian Dryad is green, mm-hmm. Psychotog is blue black, so there's 3. Meddling Mage has white in it, so there's 4, and he's got Engineered Plague in the side.
Hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So it's more like the Stasis, where like yeah, technically Stasis is a 2-color deck, but I mean not really.
But since basically he's got enough, he's got 4 Rainbow Lands, and like that's enough to like cast your Engineered Plagues.
Mm.
And that's basically what it boils down to. But I mean, it is consistently like Meddling Mage and Quarian Dryad. It is very much a 3-color deck.
Yeah,
like, those are 4 ofs in the main deck. It's primarily blue white, but yeah, it's a funny thing. Is I forgot to mention this is huge. He has Mox Diamonds as well, so like so he's got City Brass and Mox Diamonds.
That's a big help.
Yeah, but like that's the other thing about the deck is like other than Mox Diamonds, the deck is like non-reserve list, so it's super cheap.
Yeah, that's a huge like. That's huge criteria for a deck like being something I want to play or like am interested in investing in. The idea that I can buy it for a couple $100. It's relatively affordable.
Yeah. Now, obviously, the Mox Diamonds change that.
Yeah.
It goes from like a $200 deck to a $3,200 deck.
Jesus. But it's so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, they're fucking like $600 or $700 a piece. That's, and like at this point, I'm just like, whatever. Like, if I was going to get those, it would be because I was, like, legitimately playing and wanted to play this deck. It'd be like, okay, I have proxied it. I'm playing it. I will trade into them. And then, like, we've discussed multiple times, I will trade some of, like, I'll trade my dual lands, which are a savings account, into a different savings account, which is Mox Diamonds.
Yes.
And I'll take a little bit off the top there because there's effectively transaction fees, but, like, I'm fine having money parked in Mox Diamonds as opposed to dual lands.
Yeah.
It's like, so.
It's so funny.
But yeah, if you don't have any, basically, equity setting aside in Magic, so to speak, like, if you're just looking that's like, oh, cool, if I wanted to play that deck, I just have to shell out $3,200. Cool, I'll just play Black White Controlled Card Kingdoms for $71 for the whole deck.
100%. The same thing was like with Stasis, where it's like, I'll just go play Stasis for $50.
Right.
And if you're gonna play
Stasis, is a good deck.
If you're gonna play Stasis, play the Root Maze version. It's way better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job, like brewing that.
Yeah,
like it doesn't. Like there are decks that it feels that can beat it and whatnot, mm-hmm. but like I don't. Outside of just like I could build decks to beat it, but in the current metagame, I don't really see anything that it's just like dead to, other than just like hyper fast all-in combo, because like I said, you've kind of gone down a little bit on the free counter spells.
Oh, a ton. Yeah, absolutely.
So like your shields aren't quite up as much,
mm-hmm.
but like even something like Dreadnought, like as soon as they you like if say they force through the Dreadnought, you just resolve a Stasis.
Yeah, you get one of, you,
like
you,
it swings once, now do it again.
Yeah, I'm not dead, and now I can work on protecting Stasis and locking the board. And there's definitely gameplay you have where you can you know, you can cast your second Dreadnought and just sacrifice your first. Like, you have options. But one thing I didn't think about, even though we've talked about it, but Stasis does remove half of the enablers for Dreadnought. Like, if you can get Stasis out before they get a Dreadnought, like, all their vision charms don't do anything anymore that are relevant.
Yeah. Outside of just kill their own fucking... I mean, they can vision charm Black Vice.
Yeah, you could vision charm the Black Vice to death, but, like, that's okay. I have more. I'll draw more Black Vices. I'm very content once the game gets to a Stasis lock where like we can just not play Magic for several turns. I'm cool with that.
Yep. So like, there's, again, not to say that it's unbeatable, or I wouldn't even say it's like, it's not like a 50-50 versus every deck or anything like that, but like it seems like we've built a pretty reasonable Stasis list.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm very happy that, with like, where it is.
Yeah, it's a good deck. I wish I could do the same with elves.
I'm telling you, we need to cut Quarian Ranger and play blue black or green black elves.
Well, I was thinking about it, and like, I just don't think duress is enough, because like the black in Legacy also buys you a couple other things. Like, it'd be duress and Cabal Therapy basically, mm-hmm. but like Abrupt Decay or Assassin's Trophy was another really good one. And not that I don't think it would improve some matchups, but overall, I just don't think that's going to... Like, the flip side, it's going to make the mana worse
mm-hmm.
in a deck, in a format where, like, Wasteland is in 34% of decks.
Yeah, you're right.
And, like, don't get me wrong, I want it to work, and I'm not even opposed to trying it, but I don't think it's going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
If it was Thoughtseize as opposed to Duress, I could see it. Like, Thoughtseize, like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
But, like, Duress is good when you can, like, take the thing you... Like, if I've got two or three answers, and I can be like, well, I'm going to take the thing that I can't answer and then use my other answers to answer the stuff I can. Like, yeah, I'll take your artifact because I've got, you know, enchantment destruction. Or, like, I'm going to take your thing that's going to stop me from doing my combo. Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be great for sniping Engineered Plague.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be awesome. But I don't know if it's going to be enough.
Hmm.
So.
That sucks. But, yeah.
And it does weaken it quite a bit because, like... Like, I was thinking about, so you'd need Llanowar Waste. You probably wouldn't run any basic swamps, because you'd probably just go with City of Brass instead. Mm-hmm. I need to check. There's a Llanowar Elf that produces black, but you take a point of damage. It's called Elves of Deep Shadow. That might be legal. That would help. But, like, what I'm sitting here, I'm going, so I put 4 to 6 black cards in my main deck, and I don't start with one. Like, a mana producing land.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's just like, there's a lot of fail states.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So,
Well,
let's see.
I said, I'm happy you've settled on and you found something you really like. Like, and it's a really good deck. It's a really popular deck. So that means the card will get banned out of it soon.
Right.
But until then.
Oh, yeah. They'll just be like, oh, by the way, Matt got on the Stifleknot train, huh? Yeah, we're finally done with fucking... Oh, like, they won't ban Dreadnought. They'll be like, Gush has got to go.
Yeah.
Matt finally decided to dip his toe into blue, almost specifically to play Gush.
Well, I... Don't get me wrong.
And we're going to ban Gush.
I would much rather that not be the case, because that will indeed...
Stasis is dead if they
take
Gush.
That will indeed kill my deck as well. So I'd be very sad about that.
Yeah. That was one of the things. So I was listening to, they did a big two-parter episode on Spike Colony. And the first part, they did like an entire episode talking about the Burns versus Goblins matchup, which is like, just as Magic theory goes, just a really interesting conversation. And has a lot of applicable stuff like outside of pre-modern.
Mm-hmm.
But like the next part of it, they have on Sam Black, who's like, you know, one of the best Magic players ever. And like, he said something that just like, it's always been true, but like, it just finally clicked where he's just like, I'm just not going to play a deck that just draws a card a turn.
Yeah, I agree. It's a huge and, like, weakness you opt into.
And it, like, it was just one of those things where like, I'm kind of at a low point in pre-modern as far as like deck selection goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things where it was just like the right thing said at the right time. And I was like, you know what? Me neither. Like,
yep.
I'm fucking done. I'm done just ripping random cards off the top and hoping it works out.
It's way better when you get to cast things like Portent and Gush and all kinds of fun stuff like that.
I know, don't get me wrong. Like, I've complained about the power of cantrips. I mean, that's literally what our show's fucking called.
Yep.
But, like, I was the guy who fought against it. I was the elves guy. I was the green player, green or black. I've been playing elves and fucking Duress and Bottomless Pit and the Rack, like that kind of shit. I've been playing that forever.
Mm-hmm.
Longer than potentially some of our listeners have been alive, like, and I'm not bullshitting. And it's so weird for me to just be like, all right, I'm throwing in the towel, just give me some fucking Gushes.
Yep.
Gush foil, we're doing this.
Like you said, let me.
And to be fair, it's fucking awesome to like, hey, you're about to resolve a Root Maze. No, you're not. I'm gonna Gush and fucking counter that for free and draw two cards. Cool.
Yep. You get to be involved in what's going on.
But like, wait a second, because I've done it before, but I've always kind of done like meme counter decks. And to be fair, in EDH I've played a lot of counter spells, like especially when we got like semi-serious, where it's like I just blew in like all a bunch of my decks.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're playing against three people, it's very important to not let other things resolve.
Yeah. They just go turn.
They all do bad shit.
When someone just casts a Necropotence, it's nice if anyone, can we come together and stop this from happening, please?
Right. But as far as like competitive formats goes, I've always just been like, I'm not the blue guy. I don't want to be the blue guy. I want to be the guy that beats blue.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to the club.
I know. It fucking sucks. I hate this club. Psychotalk's fun.
And on that note, I think we will wrap this episode up. Head on over to our Patreon stuff. We'll do some more pre-modern content and get me a little closer to getting dinner started. So, Matt, was there anything else you wanted to talk about this week?
No, I think we're good.
Alrighty, well, if that's the case, then I think we will see everybody, as long as we don't forget, next week.
Yep, have a nice night, guys.
Welcome, step on in to the Cantrip Cartel. Jake and Matt chatting meta games, we're slinging some spells, casting ales, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time, they're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the wildwood prairies, where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queering rangers scrounge the sylvan libraries, for when the greens and zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the Birchlorian mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carpet of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands of sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaur stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel. Drawing cards with the Cantrip Cartel.